This week, world leaders gathered in New York for the 73rd session of the United Nations General Assembly. President Trump reiterated his commitment to an America First agenda, and world leaders began moving on without the United States. French President Emmanuel Macron proposed countries refuse to sign trade deals with those who do not comply with the Paris Climate Treaty. Germany, France, Britain, Russia, China, and Iran recommitted to the Iran nuclear deal, moving ahead without the U.S.
People are scared of the globalization monster as they see it, and that's partly because the worst instincts of it haven't been tamed properly.
To help us assess the role of the United States in the global community, I sat down this week with former Secretary of State John Kerry, who spoke about the fear of globalism and the geopolitical consequences of giving into that fear.
The movement of factories or goods because of trade, or the wages that don't seem to go up sufficiently. And so there's a lot of anxiety in our country, understandable and real, as a result of what has happened to the relationships around the planet. But we're not responding properly to that, I believe. I think we did under President Obama. I think now we're roiling the waters of our alliances in very dangerous ways. We are abdicating certain choices and responsibilities to other countries. And now we see China and Russia actively working to dismantle the narrative that sustained our progress during the last century and the early part of the 21st, which is American leadership and the liberal order of the West. And now you hear President Xi and you hear President Putin attacking that and providing an alternative narrative, which is this is going to be the China century and so forth. We have to push back against that by showing our values, by living our values.
But do you see this as a continuing battle long after Trump is no longer president, that the country is still, whoever the next president is,
always there will be that struggle.
It's always going to be that struggle, right?
Yes, there will be some of that struggle. But the issue is, do you have a leader who is articulating the reasons specifically for why this is good, a certain track is good for the United States? Let me be explicit. The United States of America can't just trade with itself. 95% of the world's customers live in other countries. And if you're going to grow your economy, you're not going to grow it by shutting down and turning inwards. You have to engage in relationships. But the trade relationships have to change from what they were. The president is actually correct. And we also were correct because we all pointed out that China is not allowing adequate access to the market. China is applying rules that are unfair and demanding technology transfer, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of different things to be arguing about. The question is, how do you go at it? The way the president's going at it, I think it's going to compound matters and make them worse. And in the end, will most likely cost jobs and raise prices for average Americans. I think there's a better way to go at it. But leaving that aside, we're going to have to continue to articulate to our fellow citizens why it makes a difference. I'll give you an example. I mean, if we're going to fight terrorism and we're going to minimize the need to deploy American troops to other countries to fight it, it would help if those countries were able to send some of their kids to school or build some infrastructure or do things. China is spending $1 trillion a year now, touching 70 different countries heading towards Europe and East Asia, not to mention what they're doing in South Central Asia or Africa or other places, in order to develop infrastructure, in order to build relationships. We're not. We're just not doing that. And so I think we have a waning leverage for the interests of our country in order to have outcomes that we want. And I think that's dangerous for us.
What's a part of the world that you think is a place we're not spending enough time looking at, either because of its opportunity or because of its potential danger as we look down the road?
There are a number of them. I mean, frankly, globally, we have retreated and withdrawn on a critical issue, which is called climate change. And the United States under President Obama, we led the effort to get there, to bring China to the table, to get the Paris Agreement passed. And now, tragically, we've seen a president literally walk away from it, pull out of it, and not offer American leadership. In addition, on trade, there are legitimate things to perhaps tweak in the TPP and fix if you don't like them. But to walk away without getting any of that done is to have pulled our hard-fought-for influence out of the region and out of the 12 countries, us included, that were going to be part of that agreement. The other 11 have now gone forward with the agreement, but writing out the things that were beneficial to the United States. So we lose, and we've lost the influence there. I mean, there are other places, similarly, in Europe, we just don't have the relationships that we did in order to fix certain things that we need to fix. So I think I worry very, very much about the Horn of Africa, North Africa development. I worry about corruption on a global basis. I worry about the South Central Asia, where there are some real challenges in terms of extremism and what may happen if we don't deal with that. You know, there are 1.8 billion children who are 15 years old or younger in the world. Perhaps 300, 350 million of them are not going to go to school. They're just not going to go to school anywhere. And from what I heard from fellow foreign ministers and others in the regions, the extremists are grabbing their kids at age 12, 13, 14. They pay them a stipend for a while, and then they proselytize to them, and then those guys become the recruiters. They don't have to be paid anymore. And this foreign minister said to me, you know, these guys have a 35-year plan, and we don't even have a 5-year plan. I think there's no over there anymore in the world. We're all connected. Even people in poverty have smartphones. They see what other people have. They're able to communicate. And if we don't have the right value system and the right levels of education in this increasingly technological world, we're asking for trouble in the long run. And that is the security of the United States of America, put bluntly. No other way to say it.
Among the many topics we addressed, the secretary told me he's stopped paying attention to every tweet coming from the president.
I forget about the daily tweets. It's a waste of time. Focus on the things that make a difference to the quality of life of our fellow Americans and start to make a set of better choices about those things.
But recently, Secretary Kerry found himself in a Twitter skirmish with the administration. According to critics, Kerry overstepped boundaries when he met with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif well after he left office. Here's UN Ambassador Nikki Haley on Fox and Friends.
What Secretary Kerry did was not only disrespectful, it was hurtful to America. When we are sitting there trying to get Iran to come to the table in a way that they understand the ballistic missile testing has to stop, the support of terrorism has to stop, they have to quit selling arms to the Houthis. When all those things, to have another American go in and say, don't worry about it, that absolutely is anti-American, and it was hurtful to the American people.
So why did he take to Twitter to reply to his critics? I do wonder your decision to go to Twitter to respond, how you made that, and whether you
Well,
think,
I just thought I just thought it was so absurd, but so insidious in a sense. I mean, alleging that I was doing something I wasn't doing. And I learned in 2004 with the Swift Boat stuff, don't let anything like that sit there and stand there. The fact is that I have not met with the Iranians from the moment the president made the decision to get out of the deal. From the moment they laid down a policy, I have not met with them. So that was just a complete misstatement, number two. I only met in the context of a global conference. I was at the Munich Security Conference. I was at the UN General Assembly when other senators, by the way, I wasn't a senator at the time, I'm a former senator, but active senators met with them. Other people met with them. The Council for Foreign Relations in New York met with them. The New York Times board met with them, et cetera. And, you know, Henry Kissinger, of course, has made, 40 years now? He's been traveling to China, traveling to Russia, meeting with people. And I discussed in full with Secretary Pompeo before they made the decision. I gave him my point of view. It's very nice. He listened to me at length. We had a long discussion about it. He gave me a lot of time. And then they made their decision. And I haven't met with anybody since that decision was made.
The back and forth, though, on Twitter, you also got a couple of sort of Trumpian moments in there about maybe you should be paying more attention to Mueller than me and dig on Omarosa. Do you feel like you have to respond to Trump in the way that he uses Twitter, the way he acts toward people?
I said what I thought ought to be said,
yeah.
Period. I mean, I said what I thought ought to be said, and enough said. I think that, I don't think anybody's well served by the process, but I mean, obviously that's the way he's approached his presidencies from the day he started running, and it hasn't changed, and his own staff appear to have given up on trying to control it.
Twitter fights aside, this is a pivotal moment in U.S.-Iranian relations. This week at the UN, President Trump strongly condemned Iran.
The Iranian regime exports violence, terror, and turmoil. It illicitly procures sensitive items to advance its ballistic missile program and proliferates these missiles all across the Middle East.
Meanwhile, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani criticized the U.S. strategy and called for a return to negotiations.
The United States' understanding of international relations is authoritarian. In its estimation, might makes right.
Rouhani also criticized the economic sanctions imposed by the U.S., calling them a form of economic terrorism. Meanwhile, several European nations and other members of the Iran nuclear deal announced this week a mechanism to continue to do business with the country and bypass U.S. sanctions. Again, more isolation for the United States. I asked Secretary Kerry if this is an inflection point in our relationship, not just with Iran, but with our allies.
I think Iran is considerably more complicated than the administration has allowed for, and the president understands. All of us, our prior administrations, Democrats, Republicans, we all object to Iran's intervention in other countries. We object to their missile program. We did object when I was negotiating the agreement, and we didn't change the relationship on that. We kept missile sanctions in place in that agreement. We kept sanctions in place on human rights. We kept sanctions in place on the transfer of weapons to Yemen and elsewhere, and we raised those sanctions. So nobody takes a second seat to objections to Iran's foreign policy choices. Support for Hezbollah, we objected. We labeled the Hezbollah a terrorist organization. I mean, so we've been very clear about those things. And nobody should play a game saying, well, you don't care about those things, you're not. The issue is, how do you change those things? And in the Obama administration, the president and all of us agreed on a fundamental decision. You're better off dealing with missiles and dealing with support for terrorism and dealing with these things if they don't have a nuclear weapon than if they do, or if they're not moving towards a nuclear weapon than if they are. And so we specifically said, let's get the nuclear weapon off the table while we continue to press these other issues. And what President Trump has done is just pulled out of the agreement, basically making America the country that has broken the agreement, and alienating Russia, China, France, Germany, Britain, all of whom helped get the agreement and all of whom are trying to keep the agreement. So if there were to be some flare-up as a result of this effort now, those countries are not going to rush into the UN Security Council with us. They're going to say, you broke it. You know, you fix it. It's made it exceedingly difficult for any Iranian leader politically to just sit down with them and say, oh, okay, this is good. We'll do everything you told us to do. No leader can survive. So from a negotiating point of view, I think you would have been far better off, and I said this to administration folks who would listen, by staying in the agreement and making the ultimatums to Iran with the other countries at your side, all of you pushing for the change of behavior. And I think that the situation's actually been made more dangerous, not less, as a result of the choice the president made.
And do you think that this choice that the president made was aimed at President Obama himself or the policy?
I don't know. I can't get into the psychobabble of it all. I just don't know. All I know is a decision was made, which I think is not in the best interests of getting done what we need to get done, and has made the world slightly more turbulent as a result.
John Kerry was Secretary of State under the Obama administration. His new memoir is called Every Day is Extra.